Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, it's J. Michael Michael here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you can't find anything worth listening to on the AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is in the biggest and the best in LA as a .com, so we have it all from sports to music to self-help to just about anything, including talk. And right now, we have the new writer's favorite show, The Writer's Block. So sit back, pour some more wine, grab another box of chocolates, and enjoy, because it all starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Eclipses through the clouds, there's fire on the needle, white powder flowing down. The dust sits on my bureau, there are tears in Michael's eyes, his veins run thick with poison as he just sits there and cries. Mama's on the streetcar, smoking cigarettes. The truth has been paved over. She sits there so depressed. She always says she does well, but you can feel it in her sighs as she and the sickly blind boy watch the moon in Noah's eyes.
Who be?
That'd be, the song is called The Moon in Noah's Eyes.
Uh-huh.
It was written by a young lady named Marion Schneider and myself.
Uh-huh. Oh, congratulations.
It is from our 1983 EP called Sundown.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's another Sundown.
Yeah. Yeah. Came along much longer, much before yours.
Much before mine. Yeah,
yeah, it's that actually is it's a great tune. It's a,
yeah, it sounds
as a matter of fact, the lyrics are in the book I gave you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, page 35.
They're in there. I apologize. I have not had.
That's okay. I don't care. Hey, this is LA Talk Radio, and you're now listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in studio with Bob Brill.
Yes, sir.
All righty, and on the air with Bobby Jean Bell. And Bobby, are you going to say hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh,
here.
Good. And hanging out in the valley someplace, underneath a tree, kicking back, eating a burrito. We have.
And for that, I'm glad he's not in the studio.
We have him. We have himself, Mr. Henry Park.
Greetings, fellow intellectuals.
Okay. And burrito eaters.
Hello. All right.
Yeah, we're here.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea. Let's go to press. The big news is that AMC's The Sun, starring Pierce Brosnan and Jacob Laughlin, returned for season 2 this past Saturday night. I just finished watching it. It's very good. And the big change is that in addition to having an 1849 story and a 1959 story, there is also a 1988 story.
Oh.
And if you missed the season opener, come to the Henry's Western Roundup Facebook page, and I posted a link to see it online.
Oh, cool.
There you go.
Which is handy. They ran all 10 episodes of Season 1 the day before Season 2 started, but I'm sorry to say that Season 1 isn't currently available to stream. Oh. Personally, I think if you wait 2 years between seasons, and it's a continuing story,
yeah,
you should make it Season 1 very available. Did anyone else get to watch it yet?
No.
No.
Nope.
Okay, they're getting it up to speed in a sense, because they've been away for 2 years, but it's very entertaining. It's very intriguing.
Yeah, I've got six
HD net. I'm sorry.
I said I have six different shows that I'm watching religiously, and it's like adding a seventh is like, should I?
Oh man, I tell you, before Westworld's second season started, I watched all of Westworld season 1 again. And I don't know if I'm going to keep doing that for shows. I think a good story ought to be able to, tell itself from where it is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That wasn't in English, but you know what I mean. Yeah. I don't think movies should and TV should require so much homework.
Well, and we think that with books, too, if it's in a series, right. You know, you should be able to pick it up at any point in the series that you've heard about it and be able to get into it.
Right. I agree completely. I remember when 2001, A Space Odyssey came out, the movie, and all my friends loved it. And I was saying, yeah, I like it, but I didn't understand a whole lot. And they said, well, you have to read the book first, to which I said, they didn't give me one at the theater.
No, there isn't. You don't read the book first. You go to the movie, so you don't have to read the book.
That's right. That's the same reason we read the classic comic version.
I know. And besides that, I fell asleep in the movie. To me, it was boring. It really was.
It's like you know, watching the Ten Commandments and saying you got to go back and read the Bible.
I know. or sitting in Lewiston, Idaho, and watching the bridge rust. You know, it's just like, ew. All right, Henry, we're stealing your thunder. Go ahead.
That's okay. HDNet Movies is having a Summer of Westerns, a three-month film festival starting May 19th and continuing through August 11th every Sunday. And it's being hosted by the excellent actor Wes Studi.
Oh, very cool.
Really? Cool.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
In fact, it's beginning with his film Geronimo, an American Legend. Mm-hmm. And that opening night, they'll also be showing Gregory Peck in The Big Country, Robert Redford and Jeremiah Johnson, and Yul Brynner, Robert Mitchum, and Charles Bronson in Via Rides.
Wow. Via Rides. Great movie, actually. A fun movie to watch.
I haven't seen that in forever. Because Robert Mitchum's a pilot in that one.
You know? Pilot, and then Charles Bronson is the number two guy, right under Via. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yul Brynner is Via. Now,
with hair.
Yeah.
Right. Well, he had hair. He just kept shaving it off.
Right.
Go figure. Anyway.
That was a personal choice, not like mine.
Right.
By the way, does anyone know Pluto TV?
No.
I never heard of it. Seeing it advertised on buses. Apparently, Viacom and Mickey Mouse's dog created a streaming service called Pluto TV.
And it's out of this world.
Is it free?
It is. It is, but it's no longer officially a planet. But it is free. And once you download the app, you can watch it on any phone, any kind of platform, computer. And this week, they instituted the CMT Western Channel with 24-hour Western movies.
Oh, really?
Oh, my gosh.
Cool.
Yeah. Now, I haven't been able to find a schedule on it yet, but just checking in from time to time, I've caught Alan Ladd in The Proud Rebel, Wild Bill Hickok, Swift Justice, which is a 2016 film with Jeff Fahey and Lee Majors.
Well, I guess you got to say it's probably far out.
Oh, God.
Way far.
We just woke Brill up.
There was also 2009. Arthur Brill, come in.
Yes.
But there's also All Hell Broke Loose, one of David Carradine's last films. And when I looked in a half hour ago, they were showing Gene Autry in Boots and Saddles.
Oh my gosh.
Boy, there's an old one.
What an interesting lineup.
Yeah, so it's jumping all over the place.
Well, Henry, I got it. Oh, go ahead. I want to tell you something, but go ahead and finish what you're saying.
Oh, well, I was moving on to something else, so go ahead.
Oh, I was inspired at the gym the other day by you. Mm-hmm. I hadn't watched any of the Forsaken Westerns in a while, and I just decided to watch one, and it was so bizarre because it was Walter Brennan, and I looked it up finally. It was on the Schlitz Playhouse in the early 50s, and his daughter, Ruth Brennan, was a co-star, and I was just so amazed by the writing. I mean, and the writer, and I wish I could remember his name. I looked him up. And it was a kind of a foreign name, and unbelievable turn of a phrase constantly that he had Walter Brennan say. And it was just like, wow, why can't I write like that? You know, why can't anybody write like that? It was just unbelievable, just turns of phrases. And it was an episode called Lucky 13. If you look it up on Forsaken Westerns, check it out. And it was kind of bizarre that Ruth Brennan was there too, and she only had like a few roles in like 10 roles in history. And of course, Walter Brennan had like a zillion of them. But anyway, I just wanted to share that with you. It was a great episode that has been lost over the ages of Schlitz Playhouse. But anyway, go ahead.
Actually, Walter Brennan's his best role was Stumpy in Rio Bravo.
Yes, yes, Yes.
Anyway.
That, he was wonderful in that.
Oh, it was a great part for him. It was perfect. Yeah. Anyway, onwards and upwards.
Right. I don't know how many actors listen to the show, but any of them that are out there who can make it to Tucson, Arizona on Saturday, May 18th, better do so. Travis Mills will hold an open call for actors to be in one of his Westerns. Travis and his company, Running Wild Films, have made quite a few films, including the Western Blood Country, and he was the associate producer as well on Tombstone Rashomon. And he has announced a remarkably ambitious schedule, 12 Westerns in 12 months.
Wow.
Holy crap.
I'm going to... Yeah,
a Western a month.
To,
really?
Details on the first film, including links to sides for various roles. If you want to actually audition, you can print it out and warm up before you come in.
That's
going to
be
in the next roundup, and I'll be talking to Travis at length about this whole project very soon.
Uh-huh. Does he have the whole slate of films already laid out? All 12?
I don't know if he has all 12, but he's got a bunch, like at least half a dozen, maybe more. So, yeah, this is something he has been working on as long as I've been talking to him, which is like a couple of years. And now it all seems to be clicking together.
Interesting. Yeah. That's a lofty ambition.
Yeah.
12 movies in 12 months.
Well, just the distribution of them is, you know, unless you lock up, you know, like a streaming service or something, Netflix or something.
Yeah.
But.
Right. Well, of course, that, you know, in the old days, that's what Republic would do. They would do usually 8 movies per year for each series. And, they had their well-oiled machine. They had all their locations and all their horses and everyone under contract. And, you know, they just went from person to person.
Sure.
Or should I say project to project? Yeah, if you can really organize it, it can work very well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Except when you have to bring in an outer space
guy.
Maybe
it's time to get it. sorry.
Right. Yeah, it was pretty awful when the Gene Autry series brought in guys from outer space and that kind of stuff in their serials. You know, come on. It was like, really?
Oh, come on. That stuff is great fun. But of course, now there you're talking about, you know, like 15, 20 minute serial chapters.
Right.
I'm talking about producing 8 feature films a year, which is what they did like with the Three Mosquitoes and also Gene and Roy and so on. They would do them in series of about 8.
Right. Oh, John Wayne was in those. John Wayne was in those. Some of them.
Oh, sure.
The Republic.
He was one of the Three Mosquitoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And if you don't have HBO yet, maybe it's time to get it, because on Friday, May 31st, HBO will premiere their new Deadwood movie.
Yes.
I saw that's coming out.
Yeah. Yes. The June True West will be out very soon, if it's not out yet, featuring my article on Deadwood's return. I got to speak to Brad Dourif, Robin Weigert, the incredibly wonderful and creepy William Sanderson. The May issue that's out now has my interview with Gunsmoke writer Jim Burns. Oh, and I forgot to mention that the series he created after he left Gunsmoke, How the West Was Won, starring James Arness and Bruce Boxleitner, is running weekends on IMSP.
It is. It is. I've seen it a couple times.
Yes. And you know what? You can read all about this and more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Very good. Hey, don't go away, Henry. I want one more thing for you. I was perusing Amazon the other day, and I ran across a lot of the old Western TV series now are running on the Prime. If you have Amazon Prime, you can get them. Wyatt Earp, Colt 45, Tombstone Territory. They even have some of the Red Ryder serials from the movies.
How cool.
Yeah.
I knew they had picked up Tombstone Territory, but I didn't know about Colt 45 and Wyatt Earp.
Colt 45, right. Wyatt Earp, and there's a few more on there. The Rebel?
Oh, Johnny Yuma.
Johnny Yuma, yeah. So anyway, if you're cruising through Amazon, take a look.
I sure will.
Okay.
Outstanding.
Thanks, Henry.
You betcha. Happy trails.
Talk soon.
You too, bud.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. And here we are. We had a guest tonight, Mike Bond.
Uh-huh.
He's been on a few times with us, and he's a great writer. He writes a lot of spy stuff.
And it's very poetic that he didn't show up.
And yeah, it's very poetic that he didn't show up because I actually read his book. But it's only 106 pages. It's about 90, what do you think, Bobby Jean, about 95 pieces, maybe less than that?
It's a book on poetry.
Yeah, and it was really interesting, especially especially the introduction was fascinating.
Yes, it was.
It was really good.
Yes,
I must have read that like three or four times through because it was packed with just information and his taking everything back to, you know, cave time. And it was fascinating, fascinating.
Yeah, it was. And actually, some of those works were, they really grabbed you.
Yeah, they did.
And some of them went straight over the top of my head. But,
well, poetry, cowboy poetry, I totally get it and love it. But other poetry forms, oftentimes I have no idea what I just read. And it doesn't matter how many times I reread it.
Exactly.
I'm like clueless.
You know, I never really understood, and I say this in all sincerity, I never really understood poetry. I tried to write some, oh golly. Years ago, I actually started a book. It was on baseball poetry. And I never finished it. And that became, later on, I did what I wanted to do with the baseball poetry with my my memoir, mm-hmm. my youth baseball. And so I did it that way, which turned out to be much better for me. But I kind of never, even as a kid, I could never really get into poetry, whether it was haiku or anything else. I just kind of didn't settle with
me. Well, you know, poetry doesn't always have to rhyme. And that's what, you know, and that's a mistake that a lot of people make is that poetry doesn't necessarily have to be a thing of, you know, line, rhyme.
Right.
Line, rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
It can be anything.
Well, like haiku. It's like.
Yeah. You know, the only thing it can't be is free thought because then you're bouncing from thought to thought to thought to thought and you never really get any story out of it.
Yeah.
But a piece of poetry will tell you a story. If it doesn't, it's wrong.
It should.
Yeah.
Just ask Bobby.
Well,
Burns.
It should.
Yeah.
I do struggle with it.
Well, yeah, we all do. And I there's some that I like and some that I don't like. Now I just released 49 of them that I like,
mm-hmm.
but I wrote them, so you know.
Well, I hope you like them.
I do. And I was talking with our publicist day before yesterday. Mickey Mickelson and Avery Olive, and they're going to start pushing Black Dog and Tuscany Bay a little bit more.
Oh, good.
But they also wanted to do a press release for the book I just put out on poetry mm-hmm. called That's All You Get, which actually is the title of one of the pieces mm-hmm. in there. And this was their press release, and I thought I'd read this out just so you guys can get an idea. The title is Musings from a Mind Not Yet Healed from the Ravages of Years Gone By, a standout collection of thoughtful poetry and heart-tugging lyrics. Author and musician Jim Christina lays himself bare in That's All You Get, a raw and poignant collection of lyrical prose. In his latest release, Christina's talent is evident as he takes the reader on a journey of discovery and the lives, real and fiction, that have inspired his writings. Each song, lyrical poem, is accompanied by a moment of thoughtful, unwavering honesty and reflection. Or shares the missing piece of the dream plucked from the night that became desperate to be written on the page. Opening the collection, Christina says, I spent hours crafting prose, poetry, and lyrics for music written or yet to be written, and in doing so discovered one basic truth of life and writing. Whereas music bars and notes come and go, the lyric or poetry of the song, if you will, is immortal. Not only will readers of That's All You get a sense and understanding of who Jim is, the man behind the pen and melody, but a deeply personal and immersive look into his soul, and it will stick with you long after you've finished. And that was...
That's great, except there's one thing. I'm really uncomfortable with the image of Jim Christina laying himself bare.
I know. Yeah, that made me a little uncomfortable, too. But
tell us a little bit about this collection, because it has a really interesting story about kind of how you found it again, and just give us a little background on this collection.
The collection itself, I started actually the first piece in it, not the first piece, but the oldest piece in it, I wrote in high school in 1967 in one of my class. I think it was a lit class. And I actually wrote this little four-line ditty in the back of my English notebook. And it's It's
what was her name?
No. And I got it back. I got it like a B plus on my notebook, and I just threw the crap together. But in the back where this little poem was, it was like an A, and it says, "I wish all your work was this good."
Really?
Yeah, I thought that really was really interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's really short. It says, "Oh, what this classroom means to me, existence and depression spree, to sit in here almost asleep and try to look awake." And that's it.
That's really good, Jim.
I know. Well, anyway, the stuff goes from 1967 up through 1983. And in October of 83 is when I sent it, this whole collection in for copyright, and it was copywritten. And from there it went and started collecting dust in the Library of Congress.
So did you write any of this in the jungles of Vietnam?
No, but I did write in between two tours, I wrote, golly, several pieces. They're all labeled as to what was written when. A couple of them I wrote with a gentleman named Mike Music, and a musician in his own right.
I was going to say, it's probably pretty lyrical.
And, well, yeah, but his father is Lorenzo Music.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, the voice of the cat.
Carlton the doorman, yeah.
And the voice of,
Garfield.
Garfield, yeah.
And I was in Japan with him, and we got together and we started writing music, and I think three or four pieces, or maybe two or three, were written with Mike, and then I got orders to go back to Vietnam, and I go, so I sat down one night and wrote another piece, and
figured you better get a bunch of them out.
I did a couple war protest pieces, which I never label as war protest pieces.
Yeah. Well, if you were still in the military.
Well, yeah. And one of them is called Burning the Holy City. And there's a couple of them in there that are kind of heavy.
You were in WAY, right? Did you tell me?
No, I was in I Corps. I was never in WAY. Okay. Well, I went after Ted, I was in WAY.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I went through WAY once. But there was a piece in there called Air Assault. It's about a raid in a village in Vietnam, from the 1st and 9th Cavalry. And that's the rest of it's just drivel.
Well, now it was interesting that couple pieces that you wrote in high school. One of them was about a vampire, but I can't find the
actually title. That was not written in high school. That was written in the '70s. I sent it to my high school drama teacher, Clayton Liggett.
Okay.
And at the time, I was in the very first drama course that they had at San Diego High School in Encinitas. And drama course, for those who don't know what it is, instead of sing, you speak in harmony.
Hmm.
It's a very interesting concept, and it's very hard to do. Because you have bassos and bass tenors, and you have all the different ranges, but you're speaking now instead of singing.
Mm-hmm.
So I submitted this piece to Clayton, and he loved it. He wanted to do it. And it's called The Visit. It's about a vampire.
And then
he wrote me back and he goes, "Have you got any more?" So I had just finished a piece called The Ball. It's about a ball at a castle in medieval times.
Mm-hmm.
Sent that to him. That both of those were done in the same show.
Cool.
I mean, it's like I say in the book, how proud was I? two of my pieces got in.
And many of your works in this book do reflect back on medieval times.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
That was always one of my things that I thought about when I was a kid. There was two or three things that I really liked to study and get into. And one of them was the medieval era. Another one was sailing.
Mm-hmm, sailing.
Not just, in a sailboat going, out along on the lake. I'm talking about a three-master,
right,
a big sailor, and a whaling ship or whatever. And it's just
you were that in a past life, is that what it was?
Well, I think I make that comment one of the openings of one of the pieces, is that I knew that I was in the old West, but I never, maybe I was a sailor too, who knows. I love the period of the knights and the ladies and the chivalry, but then I also tried to bring in the people who weren't fortunate. There is one piece in there called "The Serfs Are the Ones That Are Slain,"
right? Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's written, that was actually written right, I think I had just graduated from high school when I wrote that. And it's, you know, it's about a rebellion, the serfs are rebelling against the knights and the king of the.
I was writing a script with a friend of mine, basically set in that time period. I don't want to say the name of it because it's hasn't been sold yet, but it's based on a public domain book from many years ago, and it's really interesting to get into the weapons of the time, because we always think of, you know, the swords and the you know, the battle axes, and but there was some other weird stuff.
Oh yeah,
these guys created that were just weird tools that became weapons.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but, I fought, you know, and I was in several engagements, and I using rifles and shotguns and machine guns is a little different than standing toe to toe with some guy and a broadsword.
Yeah, yeah,
or a spear and a shield.
Yes.
You know, that took a special kind of guts.
And, also a special kind of strength.
I suppose if I had lived back then, and who knows, possibly I did, that I probably would have been the one that would have turned around and started going the other direction.
You took a sword and stole a brand new and only been dropped once?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's like the Italian war rifles, only dropped once. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I came up with something this week I wanted to share with you. I came up with the new Lancer story, which I'm going to write, you know, toward
number
the end of this year, number six. And problem is, it's set in Nebraska, in western Nebraska, and I'm having trouble finding a town to set it in that was in existence in 1881.
Wellington.
In 1881.
Wellington.
I don't think so.
Well, yes, it was.
You sure?
I guarantee you it was.
And where exactly is Wellington?
Wellington is like in the middle of the state.
Okay, I'm looking for something more westerly, sort of the western half of the
Abilene?
State. Haven't found that one. I've looked at about
You're talking about Kansas, right?
No. Oh, Nebraska.
Oh, Nebraska. Yeah. Wellington's in Kansas.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'm looking at, I'm finding these little burgs and stuff that are right in the right spot.
Yeah.
But they were like, they didn't come into existence until 1899, and I need something about 1881, 82 at the latest.
Yeah.
Maybe 1880, or actually earlier would be better. And it's, I will give you a hint. It's going to deal with a woman who dealt with cattle before she became famous for doing the same thing.
Uh-huh.
And that's, I'll leave it at that. But I really, you know, I try when I write the Lancer stories to pick a town that people would know. Like, I'd love to use Lincoln.
Sure.
Lincoln, Nebraska. But Lincoln is, and I may end up using Lincoln, although depending on, you know, what towns that I do the research on and can find. But I kind of don't want to do that.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of want to place it more westerly for some reasons that I really can't explain at the moment. But I came up with a story based on some true facts, and I kind of liked the story, and I said, okay, I'm going to set it before that, because I have a way to rescue, and then she becomes who she is later on.
Gotcha.
And so I'm kind of fascinated by the story, and there's a lot of legend, and actually, it goes on to some very, later on in her life, she was very involved very much in some very, very famous transactions and dealings in another state. But I kind of wanted to set it before that. So that, I came up with it. So
cool.
Now I can start outlining it when I get some time. And,
cool.
And then actually sit down and start writing it probably November, December.
Cool. Hey, Bobby Jean?
Yes?
Would you like to do your ad right now real quick so we can...
Oh, sure. Let's see. Let me grab a hold of it. Here we go.
Okay.
When you open your closet door, do you say what I say? I need something new. Or is it time to retire some of those boring shirts? Or if only I had, what would you like to see when you open that door? Boots or hats, really cool shirts, or boho embroidered tops? Out West Shop will revive your wardrobe with new fresh looks for men and women, all with great style and comfortable fabrics and for every occasion. Shop www.outwestshop.com. Enter coupon code SPRING and save $10 on your order. Call toll-free for personal service, 1-877-340-9378. Out West delivers style door-to-door, coast-to-coast, and around the world. And remember, it's always a great day out West.
And always with a smile. Yeah. And a lilt in her voice.
Well, I will tell you this, Bobby Jean. I'm sure that when I go to my closet, I don't say the same thing that you say when you go to your closet.
No, I bet you're right.
But whatever you say to yourself, telling you it's time for something new.
All right, here we go.
That's what we're looking for.
All right. As new writers, we all did it. We typed that last period, stacked our chapters, and sat back waiting for the cash to flow. Well, not even close. Sure, you finished your manuscript, but it takes a whole lot more work to have a completed book. Interested in what it takes? Well, it takes editing and rewriting and more editing and more rewriting and formatting and proofreading and then more rewriting. And if you're lucky, then you can devise a color, you can get some printed, but mostly it takes absolute shameless self-promotion. Well, why not let the folks at Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books help you do that? For a very small investment, and I mean very small investment, we can do all of that for you and get you the finished printed book you dreamt about when you first started typing. And we can help you get some dollars in your pockets. And we'll give you all the tools you need for shameless self-promotion. So we're here for new writers that don't have the foggiest idea what they're doing, and we have learned it, so we can share and help you get a book of which you can be proud and teach you how to promote. So give us a call, Tuscany Bay Books and Black Dog Publishing, 805-795-3165. And when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed that they weren't the same as other publicity firms. They work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals. So Creative Edge is your brand and your future. Mickey Mickelson and Avery Olive are publicists. Give them a holler. Go online and look for Creative Edge. Publicity, and they'll be more than happy to help you out. And there you go. And it's now 7:32. We're back in the studio. If you want to call and talk to any of us idiots in here tonight, the number here is 818-602-4929. And, of course, you can always call and talk to Bobby Jean, who's not an idiot, and she's in Albuquerque. She's the only smart one of the bunch. She got out of California.
That's funny.
Anyway, you know what? The 21st of this month, Bobby Jean, is our fourth anniversary.
I know. I can't believe it. This is, tonight is show 202.
Yeah, 202.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, like I said, we had Mike Bond scheduled, but it's up to us tonight. And between the three of us, we can always come up with something to say. So, Mike, we're sorry you're in Germany, but enjoy yourself because we're taking your show. So there you have it.
I just heard him.
Yeah, he probably screamed. Anyway, 4 years, and you know, I think this show has grown from just a little puppy, just a little cute little round-eyed puppy, to a massive bulldog. It's this. I mean, we have people scrambling to get on this show, and I never dreamt. I don't know about you, Bobby Jean, but I never dreamt in a billion gazillion years that it would ever get as big as it did. Did you?
Yes, I did, because I know I know what happens with dreams that are put into motion, and that's exactly what you did. And so I frankly, I'm not surprised at all.
Well, I'm a little shocked, but I love doing the show. I mean, the show is like it's one thing that I've done every Thursday night for the last 4 years that I haven't gotten tired of doing. So I love coming
too.
In here,
and I love reading. I really love reading something every week.
I know,
you know,
huh?
If I didn't have the deadline of this show, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
I have too many things on my plate. But
sure.
Because it's part of this show, I have to do it, and it's fabulous.
It's fun. It gets tedious, and I will never say that that's not the truth. But for the most part, it's fun. We started out just Bobby Jean, you and I, and we expanded out. We started out with you and I and Russ every fourth Thursday. And then we went, then you left, and we had Richard, and Richard left, and now we have Bob Brill, who's done a wonderful job of filling this seat.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And well, you knew that you did.
It's fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
It really is. You know, and I enjoy coming out every Thursday night and having the 1 week off when Russ is here. That's good. You know, and it's gives me a chance to kind of expand more of what I like to do. You know, when you're doing other radio, you know, depending, you're kind of boxed into some of the things that you have to do. And this is more expressive.
Yeah.
You know, which is cool and which is a lot of fun. And I you know, it's I enjoy you guys. It is a lot of fun. I enjoy, you know, talking to both of you and you know, and learning more about the craft as well.
I think that's a big deal because there has never been a writer in here, and I don't think I can name one, and I don't know if you can, Bobby, but I don't think we've ever had a writer here that hasn't imparted some bit of information to us that we hadn't even thought about before.
Yeah.
There are pearls and diamonds and
they're everywhere. Sapphire.
It's just littered. This show, it's like the... you know, the crumbs that, you know, somebody leaves to help you get someplace.
Right.
There is a trail of amazing insight. Sometimes the entire show, sometimes, you know, blocks of it.
Mm-hmm.
I go back and listen to podcasts and I hear things that I didn't hear when we were doing it,
right.
You know?
Right.
And there is this is a tremendous resource for readers and writers.
Right, right. And, you know, a lot of people don't get it, the fact that we are not only our podcasts available, but every Thursday night at 7 p.m. Pacific, we are live. We are on the air and we are live. I mean, if we make mistakes, it goes out there.
Oh, yeah. There's no editing.
There is no editing. So, you know, and we've had some doozies. But
yeah.
You know? Jerry and I were talking today, and we've had some wonderful writers on this show. We were talking today and laughing about Tosca Lee when she was on, and she was telling us a story about when she was sitting there writing, and she looked up, and they had the drone coming in the window of her office, her kids and her husband.
And she was acting out all the characters.
I know.
And the drone was flying by the window.
I know. It was just absolutely hilarious. And then her big comment about, you know, write drunk, edit sober.
That was a great book.
It was a good book. It was a good book.
I know what I was going to tell you. I pretty much have decided, just kind of getting the contract and everything, and just wait a couple more days to finally make it official. Found somebody I want to have do the audiobook for El Kabul, my terrorist novel.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And it turns out he was on an episode of what pretty much is my favorite show, you know, Madam Secretary.
Gotcha.
And he was on an episode of that, and I had him, you know, he did a little audition, and I was okay with it. And I asked him, I said, would you read something from the book that's more intense? And he read probably the most intense page of the book, and with some F-bombs, and I was like, whoa. And my wife heard it, too, and she goes, you wrote that? I said, yeah. She goes, that's a good writing. And I said, well, yeah, I know that. And she goes, he read it really well, you know? And so I think we're probably going to do that. I just told him the other day that we're leaning in that direction. We haven't officially done it yet. Because I wanted to, I didn't want to do the Lancer books yet. I wanted to do this book because it's kind of a standalone. It's different. And it's more of a thriller.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably, I mean, it's obviously... the best thriller I've written, because it's the only thriller I've written. But I'm looking forward to it, you know. And he's got a bit of an accent, but I think that's okay.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it. Because the reading of it is really, really good, and it kept us informed. I guess us engaged. Uh-huh. I was like, that's okay. Let's do that.
Yeah.
So I think we're gonna do it.
Well, you know, Richard, I messed around with having The Last Lonely Trail.
Mm-hmm.
Turned into an audiobook.
Right.
And we couldn't find anybody, an actor or anybody, that didn't want to put a Southern twang in there. And I kept telling Richard, no, tell them they don't have to use an accent because it's written into the dialogue.
Right.
You know, you don't have to do that. Just read the dialogue.
Well, my wife kept saying, well, why don't you do it? I said, I don't want to do it.
Yeah, that's a time-consuming.
Oh, man. You know, it's like... The estimate on this book, I think it's 283 pages. The estimate on this book is 8 to 10 hours. Well, you know, that's 8 to 10 hours if you don't make any mistakes and no editing. And, right. and you know, you're going to make mistakes. I mean, I usually do, I'm doing like a 30 or 40 second story. I'll usually do it in one take. Occasionally I'll do a second take, you know, and, but, you know, if I'm doing 40 seconds, there's usually a second take. Uh-huh. And that's only a 40 second spot.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I've messed around with it just for grins a couple of times. And you're doing 283 pages of straight of audio and then putting in inflection and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And because, you know, you, even if you do it like a half hour at a time, uh-huh. it takes forever. And it's very time consuming. And it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. And I don't want to get involved in it. So.
Oh, somebody just texted me and said, Sydney, Nebraska, founded in 1867.
There you go.
But Eastern, founded by the Union Pacific Railroad. I have to keep an eye on that one. I'll check that one out.
There you
what do you think, Bobby Jean?
I was just sending that to you.
I know you were.
Oh, you're.
And it actually looks like a really interesting history. There were lynchings and all kinds of things in that area. But it is Eastern. I'm multitasking while we chat.
Well, it's funny because I think Western Nebraska must have been settled much later than, you know, as far as actual settlements.
Well, a lot of the towns that were built were torn down as the railroad moved. It's just like Hell on Wheels.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And that's what they named the towns as they went was Hell on Wheels.
Right.
So,
and since we're speaking about trains, you know, this week has a very important anniversary.
Casey Jones?
May 10th, 150th anniversary.
The Golden Spike.
The Promontory, Golden Spike.
Yes.
Yeah.
Promontory Point, Utah.
Yeah. That's the East meets the West.
Right.
I just digress, you know, but...
Well, that's okay.
That's okay. That's what we're here for tonight. We can digress all we want.
It's one of those shows we get to do that.
I know. But, you know, as I was saying earlier, Bobby Jean, about this show and how much it's affected, not the writers' community, because not much affects those people, but, you know, just the listeners and the new writers. I think we've done a really great service for new writers, and at least I hope we have. And I couldn't have picked a better co-host than you.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pure pleasure.
And she actually reads all the books.
I have to say that the more I'm involved and I listen to writers share and answer our questions. And of course, on another radio show that I do, we talk to singers every week, many of them also songwriters. So we talk about the process there as well. I begin to think I'm a little like... in the play, The Music Man, he teaches, you know, the think method.
Right.
And I'm feeling like, I don't know, maybe I could actually put pen to paper and begin to write.
You probably could.
Get me all inspired.
I think you could.
You probably could. You certainly have enough information to be able to do it.
Well, you know, and two, you know, Bobby is a voracious reader.
Yeah.
And I'm not. You know, matter of fact, I kind of go the other way. And I was thinking about it the other day. I was talking to somebody. The very first radio interview I did, I was supposed to interview Johnny Western
from
Powden. Yeah. And it was all set. I knew the history. You know, I was a big fan of the show and, you know, and everything. And I was getting ready. And I was an 18-year-old kid in Prescott, Arizona on the radio. And I'd already got it. I was just ready to do it. And program director walks in and introduces me and said, okay, get out of the studio. I'm doing the interview.
Oh, my gosh,
and
really?
I hit the floor, you know. But then a couple of days later, Wynn Stewart came in, and they were coming through. They were playing at the local country western club. And Wynn Stewart, who was a country singer and country star, came in, and I knew absolutely nothing about Wynn Stewart. I mean, I heard the name before. And he did, his biggest hit was Pretty World Today. Anyway, he came in and they said, okay, you're going to interview Wynn Stewart in like 5 minutes. And I said, right. And so he walked in and we had music on. And I said, and I just fessed up. I said, look, Mr. Stewart, I'll be honest with you. I know nothing about you. Absolutely nothing. And he goes, oh, that's okay. And I said, so you're going to have to help me along. And he goes, no, don't worry. And I said, is there a song I should play? He goes, grab me one of the albums. So I grabbed the album and he goes, play this going into it. And it was a song called You Just Can't Win Stewart. And it was a funny song about his life, right? You know. And so we sat down and we're doing, and the interview was going, I mean, he was just, it was great. And I was fine. And then I said, and I kind of got something. I said, well, how about family, wife, kids? He goes, no. And it was his dinner. And I thought, oh crap. He goes, but you know, I got a secretary. It was like, oh, okay. And everything was good. And we moved right on. And, but, you know, it was like the interview I really wanted to do, I didn't get to do. And then the other one turned out to be fine.
Well, who doesn't know the Paladin song?
Oh,
I mean,
know.
Come on.
Yeah.
Everybody knows.
And that was, you know, 1972. Yeah. Because my first job in Prescott, Arizona was 72.
Well, didn't Johnny Western die not long after that, didn't he?
I don't recall.
Johnny Western? He's still alive.
Is he?
He's still alive, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's still alive. He has a Western Music Radio show, I think. I think he's still alive.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. Maybe I'm thinking of Frankie Lane or something.
No, Frankie Lane has left the building.
Yeah, Frankie Lane has left the building.
So has Marty Robbins, but their influence, it will never go away.
Well, Frankie Lane, I just remember from Rawhide.
And yeah, Johnny Western's still around, but 1934, so that'd make him, what, in his 80s?
He's almost in his 90s.
66 and 19, so that's 85.
Do your math again. You're missing a decade.
No, but 1934, that would be 66. Right, to 2000.
Okay.
And then add 19.
Okay, well, okay.
85.
So 80, no, it'd be, because it's 2019, so 80.
85.
Yeah, he was 85. Born October 28th, 1934.
Okay.
And
I don't know, I'm not a math guy.
In Two Harbors, Minnesota. Should have known that.
Yeah, I should have known that. Afghan will travel reads the card of a man. Knight without honor in a savage land. His fast gun were higher, he's a calling wind.
Soldier of fortune is the man called.
Paladin. What was on his holster, gentlemen? A paladin.
Yes, it's a paladin. It's the knight.
It's the knight from Chesset.
And do you know who he really stole his name from? There's one episode.
That's where he was in the gunfight in the quarry. The guy took him off the stagecoach because he was dying, and he wanted a replacement.
No, not that one.
Oh.
There was a gunfighter who was a bad guy that he was hired to go kill by William Conrad.
And
the bad guy was also Richard Boone. He played two parts. A guy named Smoke, that was his name. And Richard Boone ended up killing Smoke and taking the identity of Paladin at that point.
I think that's, we're talking about the same episode.
Are we?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
I don't remember that.
All I know about William Conrad is he played Jake and the Fat Man.
Yeah.
And he also
directed a lot of.
But he also was Matt Dillon in the radio
yes,
series
he was.
Gunsmoke.
Yes, he was. Oh, Bobby G, don't you love this trivia?
I do. I think we should get back to writing, though.
Oh, okay.
Well, we've only got two more minutes, so.
Oh, my gosh, we are.
We pretty much shot this show in the butt.
Well, you
know, believe we both
let
sang.
Me just ask, since you are both writers, and of course, I know you've both answered this in the past, but have you found, as you've listened to our guests talk about writer's block, has that given you any inspiration for when you hit your own blocks or not?
I will tell you this. I've never really encountered it in writing a book or something like that. I have just recently encountered it in writing a web series that I'm writing because it's comedy. And comedy, you know, I forget, Carl Reiner, I think, or somebody said it, that dying is easy, writing comedy is difficult.
Yeah.
You know, and what I'm writing is pure comedy, and it really is a stumper.
I found that since we've been talking about the writer's block and writer's block in general, I found that when I find myself at a loss for something, I do like a couple of the writers that we've talked to. I go back and reread what I've written, and sometimes I'm taking off in a direction I didn't want to go. So if I kind of backtrack and start off in a new direction, or let the character take me where he wanted to take me to start with,
right?
Instead of trying to push something into the book that really doesn't belong there,
right? Or, you know, you put an outline out there and you try to stick to that outline and you realize that at some point the outline really doesn't work and you need to go in a different
direction. Well, that's why I pants it. But, you know, a good example of that is when I was writing the final fight scene in Jefferson's Chance. And I didn't know, I knew that Jefferson was going, well, spoiler alert. Jefferson croaks. But Caleb is the only one left alive. He has no ammunition left. All he has is his Bowie knife. I didn't know what to do with that. So I did what any normal combat guy would do. I grabbed a Bowie knife and I stood at the edge of the ravine. I started screaming at the Comanches, "Come and get me! Come on, let's finish it."
There it is.
And that actually, I got to writing and I rewrote it like five times.
Did you really?
Yeah. And then it finally, God, that's really good. And I left it in the book, and everybody loves that scene.
Well, you can. It's vivid. You can really see it. I remember reading it and realizing how vivid it really was.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's standing there, and he's shot up, and he's, you know, all he's got left is his knife. That's it, you know? Be it a big old Bowie knife, but still, that's all he's got left. You know what? We're out of time, dude.
I know we are. And we sang.
I know. You're never going to let us get over that, are you?
No, no.
Okay, well, next week we have Eva Wing.
Really?
Her name is Eva Wing. Well, actually, that's her nom de plume.
Oh, that show's going to really fly.
Yeah, I know. And the name of her book is Chasing Rainbows, and it's this is her first novel. So it'll be interesting to talk to her. And I, what's her name? Who's the gal that did Heads Up, Tits Out, Bobby Jean?
Oh, I don't remember.
I don't either. But,
I'm sorry.
She's going to be talking to me about publishing her new book. The third in the series.
Cool.
So I'm getting kind of excited about that. Anyway, I think we're pretty much done.
Good
for tonight.
Good for me. Hey.
Hey. So, Bobby Jean, thank you for joining us, even though we didn't have Mike Bond.
My pleasure.
But we bonded anyway.
We bonded it anyway. So for Miss Bobby Jean Bell, Bob Brill, and myself, Jim Christina, the writer's block, we have managed to shoot another Thursday right in the butt, and we are out of here.